Everybody online, looking good.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Hello?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my underground lair.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
Okay, good evening, America, and welcome aboard.
Hey, good looking.
Hello, baby. Hey, homies.
Hey, buddy.
What's up, dude?
Just chilling, homie.
Cool, buddy.
Yeah, dude.
Buddy.
Homie.
Dude.
Shall we play a game?
Inside this room, all of my dreams become realities, and some of my realities become dreams.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside.
Hey, bud. Let's party.
Come out, wherever you are.
Hey!
Hi-ho, neighbor.
So, how are you doing?
I come in peace.
Well, well, here we are. Welcome.
Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in?
Pleased to bring you our feature presentation.
Ah, crap!
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Three Things today. I'm Jenna, your hostess, and I shall henceforth endeavor to entertain, enlighten, and or educate you for the next 30 or so minutes at least. I hope you enjoy my offerings on this episode, which include a bit about our original bits, some lucky news, and a few bloops to feed your meanie. Toss those things together with a couple of songs that make me giggle, our GWOD and TDIH segments, and you have a nice crisp three things salad. Would you like crackers with that? And thing number one today, the fossilized remains of a baby found recently has added new fodder to the debate over the origins of our species. The partial skeleton of what was once a 3.5-foot-tall adult of an ape-man species, commonly known as Lucy, named for the Beatles song that played constantly in camp the night of her discovery in Ethiopia in 1974, is probably the most famous fossil find, how alliterative, in human evolutionary history, until now. She is no longer alone in this modern world. She now has a little friend named Salam, the remains of a 3-year-old female of the same species called Australopithecus afarensis. It appears that little Salam lived about 3.3 million years ago, which is more than 100,000 years before our dear Lucy. It's a pretty unbelievable discovery, to be honest. I think it's sensational, said the American Museum of Natural History in New York's Will Harcourt Smith. He and others say the skeleton provides a trove of information, some of which will further fuel a long-standing debate. At issue, whether afarensis, which walked on two legs on the ground, could also climb trees easily and move around in them with agility. Salam has not settled the debate, but does provide new evidence of climbing ability. Salam's discovery in northeastern Ethiopia is reported in the journal Nature by Zerisene Alimzagate of the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Leipzig, Germany, Fred Spohr, professor of evolutionary anatomy at University College in London, and others. Salam was discovered in 2000. Scientists have spent 5 painstaking years removing the bones from sandstone, and the job will take years more to complete. Judging by how well it was preserved, it may have come from a body that was quickly buried by sediment in a flood, the researcher said. Scientists already knew afarensis had long arms that dangled just above the knees, just the kind of feature that would indicate climbing ability. The debate centers on whether such traits are true signs of climbing ability in afarensis or just evolutionary baggage. Spohr said so far, analysis of Salam does seem to indicate some climbing ability. While the lower body is very human-like, he said, the upper body is ape-like. The shoulder blades are like those of a gorilla rather than a modern human. The neck seems short and thick like a great ape's rather than the more slender version humans have for head stability while running. The organ of balance in the inner ear is more ape-like than human, and the fingers are very curved, which could indicate climbing ability. Curved fingers have been noted for afarensis before, but their significance is still in dispute. A big question is what the foot bones will show when their sandstone casing is removed. Will there be a grasping big toe like the opposable thumb of a human hand? Such a chimp-like feature would argue for climbing ability. Yet, to resolve the debate, scientists may have to find a way to inspect vanishingly small details of such old bones to get clues as to how those bones were used in life, he said. Salam also revealed just the second hyoid bone ever to be recovered from any human ancestor. This tiny bone, which attaches the tongue muscles, is very chimp-like in the new specimen. While that doesn't directly reveal anything about language, it does suggest that whatever sounds afarensis made would appeal more to a chimpanzee mother than a human mother. Salam includes the complete skull, including an impression of the brain and the lower jaw, all the vertebrae from the neck to just below the torso, all the ribs, both shoulder blades and both collarbones, the right elbow and part of a hand, both knees, and much of both shin and thigh bones. One foot is almost complete, providing the first time scientists have found an afarensis foot with the bones still positioned as they were in life. The work was funded by the National Geographic Society, the Institute of Human Origins at Arizona State University, the Leakey Foundation, and the Planck Institute. And that isn't all. In Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, a team of U.S. and Ethiopian scientists discovered the fossilized remains of what they believe is humankind's first walking ancestor, a hominid that lived in the wooded grasslands of the Horn of Africa nearly 4 million years ago. The bones were discovered in February at a new site in the northeastern Afar region of Ethiopia, said Bruce Latimer, director of the Cleveland Museum of Natural History in Ohio. These remains are estimated to be 3.8 million to 4 million years old and include a complete tibia and the lower part of the leg, parts of a thigh bone, ribs, vertebra, a collarbone, pelvis, and a complete shoulder blade or scapula. There is also an ankle bone which, with the tibia, proves the creature walked upright. The bones are the latest in a growing collection of early human fragments that help explain the evolutionary history of man. Right now, we can say this is the world's oldest bipedal, which is an animal walking on 2 feet, and what makes this significant is because what makes us human is walking upright, Latimer said. This new discovery will give us a picture of how walking upright occurred. The findings have not yet been reviewed by outside scientists or published in a scientific journal. Leslie Aiello, an anthropologist and head of the graduate school at University College in London, said, however, that the new finds could be significant, particularly if they have a partial skeleton because it allows you to speculate on biomechanics. Paleontologists previously discovered in Ethiopia the remains of Ardipithecus ramidus, a transitional creature with significant ape characteristics dating back as far as 4.5 million years. There is some dispute over whether it walked upright on 2 legs. Scientists know very little about A. ramidus. A few skeletal fragments suggest it was even smaller than Australopithecus afarensis, the 3.2 million-year-old species widely known by the nearly complete Lucy fossil, which measures about 3.5 feet tall. Scientists are yet to classify the new find, which they believe falls between A. ramidus and A. afarensis. The fossils will help join the dots between the two hominids, said Johann Haile Selassie, an Ethiopian scientist and curator at the Cleveland Museum of Natural History, as well as co-leader of the discovery team. This discovery will tell us much about how our 4 million-year-old ancestors walked, how tall they were, and what they looked like, he said. It opens the door on a poorly known time period, and the fossils are important in that they will help us to understand the early phases of human evolution even before Lucy. This specimen is only the 4th partial skeleton ever to be discovered that is older than 3 million years. It was found after just 2 months of excavation, 37 miles from the famous Lucy discovery. Frankly, these discoveries confuse me as much as they pique my curiosity about the origin of the human species. I hope I'm around long enough to see all of the dots connected, even though I'm still not sure what exactly that will mean to us as a species. Any ideas out there? If you have them, I'd sure like to hear them. You know how to do that. Until then, this was thing number one, and I'm finished with it.
I need a little to the sprinkle of the just get a little and I need a little on my potato pancakes, a little and I need a little I really like this dish a lot, it's delicious. My mother cooked them, they're vicious, coming right off the stove hot with steam. Top them up with applesauce and sour cream, and I'm eating, please believe it. Won't digest, I am straight feeding. Check it, got luck as a top with four seasonings. Must have tempted Adam in the garden of Eden. They're all eating, everyone is grieving. I'm fiending, I need you to get up back to the store. Buy up some more potatoes, cause I feel like busting loose, and I feel like touching juice. And can't nobody stop Hebrews, so baby tell me what's the use. So hey, I'm eating latkes here, I got it on my clothes. I am eating latkes, I'm gonna take my clothes off. I'm eating latkes here, so take off all your clothes. I am eating latkes, I'm gonna take my clothes off. With a little bit of and a sprinkle of the come on, say it. With a little bit of and a sprinkle of the with a little bit of and a sprinkle of the four latkes and a little bit of with a little oi, oi.
And now, time for the GWOD, Grandiloquent Word of the Day. Today, September 22nd, 2006, that word is Hippopotomonstrosesquipedalian. That's right, I said Hippopotomonstrosesquipedalian. It is an adjective pertaining to extremely long words. It is spelled H-I-P-P-O-P-O-T-O. Monstrosesquipedalian. Of course, the meaning is easily discovered, with hippopoto and monstro quite obviously giving a size to the important and quite sizable in itself bit of the word sesquipedalian, the origin of which is from the Latin sesquipedalis, which is a measurement of a foot and a half, which is really long for a word. It's a good thing I do not suffer from hippopotomonstrosesquipedaliophobia, or a fear of very long words, else I could never share this very fun sentence using our GWOD today. Anti-disestablishmentarianism is exceedingly hippopotomonstrosesquipedalian, but cannot compete with flossy-nossy-nihilopilification. Ouch. I think I might have sprained my tongue on that one. So there we go. Great word today. I trust that just hearing this wonderful word will inspire you all to use hippopotomonstrosesquipedalian and other multisyllabic words. At the very least, use of them will keep your tongue, and maybe your mind, limber. Also, I hope it inspires you to visit the Grandiloquent Dictionary online, a link to which can be found on the homepage of this show, threethings.podomatic.com. Give it a look, and maybe come back and leave me a message or comment using some hippopotomonstrosesquipedalian words. That would be great.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale about my virtual trip. It started from my IBM with a simple little click. I tried to surf the internet, but things did not go well. I wound up in a chat room with some cyber geeks from hell. He's trapped in cyber hell. They won't shut up, I can't escape this AOL nightmare. If I signed on to Prodigy, I bet
And thing number two today, you know, I just love catching mistakes made in movies and print and by famous people, especially in very public places. It sort of feeds the meanie in me a little bit. Don't be shocked. We all know that we all like to see others make a muddle of things. Admit it, it won't hurt. I've shared my meaniness-orality thing. And now I'll share some of the food I feed it. Just in case your inner meanie, which you have, is a bit peckish. In movies, especially Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, oh boy. In the cantina scene, the camera shows a picture of a bat-like creature picking up a drink. As it moves, you can see right through the eye on the mask. I hate it when that happens. In the movie Save the Last Dance, on the part when Julia and Sean break up, Julia is walking towards Sean in the hallways at school, and Sean is at his locker talking to some friends. Well, when they show Julia, you see a guy walking behind her going in the same direction she is going. But when they put the camera back on Sean, you see the same guy walking by going towards Julia. So how could he be walking by Julia when he was walking behind her? In Fast Times at Ridgemont High, very popular movie, when Mike and Mark are talking about girls, Mike says whenever you make out with a girl, you put on side one of Led Zeppelin 4. But in the next scene where Stacy and Mark are in the car, Kashmir is playing. Kashmir is on side one of Physical Graffiti. Wrong album, guys. In The 40-Year-Old Virgin, very funny movie, Steve Carell's character receives a new bike from his girlfriend partway through the movie, but that bicycle is visibly parked outside his apartment well before then. It's a simple error, and it should so have been noticed in the editing room. And Jurassic Park, another very popular movie, in the scene where they lower the cow into the raptor pen for feeding? Well, when the raptors are supposedly devouring the cow and the bushes are all moving violently, you'll notice a couple of people down there in the brush wearing white t-shirts, shaking the bushes. You'd at least think they would be wearing green to, you know, camouflage themselves, because the raptors might get them. And in books, like A Clockwork Orange, in his introduction, Blake Morrison states that the book is set somewhere in Europe circa 1972, but when Alex and his friends steal the car from the parking lot, we're told it's a 95 model, and I don't think Burgess meant 1895. In A Wrinkle in Time, in the part where Meg meets Calvin, Calvin asks Meg what the capital of New York is. Meg replies, New York City, of course, and Calvin tells her she's right. But she's not. The capital of New York is Albany. In Artemis Fowl, look on page 174 at the bottom of paragraph 2. It says that mulch burped due to a good clay. But wait, on pages 178 and 179, it says that because of the peculiarities of dwarf anatomy, it is physically impossible for a dwarf to burp. In All Quiet on the Western Front, on the author page, in huge capital letters, it says, Eric Maria Remarque became famous after writing the book All Quite on the Western Front. Oopsie. In The Dead Zone by Stephen King, in chapter 27, a young woman brings her son into the hall to see Greg Stilson. The child starts kicking the seat and she says, Sean, stop that. Yet when Stilson grabs the boy as a human shield, she calls him Tommy. Also in The Dead Zone, in chapter 17, John Smith works for Roger Chatsworth as a tutor to his son. During the interview for the job, Roger is referred to as Stuart a few times, and then he goes back to being Roger. It's not a huge mistake, I know, but I was befuddled for a moment when I read it. And in Don Quixote, very famous book, about halfway through, Don Quixote and Sancho are traveling by donkey when their animal is stolen. A few pages later, we see the donkey being ridden again? I guess the thief had a moment of conscience. Most likely, this is to be explained in the following way. Cervantes had to write a second part of the book quickly before some other man wrote a second ending, which would make fun of the first part. In his rush, Cervantes overlooked that he had already had the donkey stolen, and so the animal reappears in a fit of forgetfulness. Think that works? In the Declaration of Independence, famous document that it is, the last paragraph, oh boy, what a boofa this is, my forefathers misspelled the word British by spelling it with two T's. I know it's not huge, but it wasn't spelled that way even then. And in the Bible, probably the most famous book, in the book of Genesis, when God is creating the world, the Bible refers to God as He and then as they. So is there one or are there more? Now I'm all confused again. Also in the Bible, God, in His infinite wisdom, decided, apparently, that He was going to drown a bunch of fish. While many translations of the Bible have found this mistake and thrown it out, there are still plenty of copies with the following in them. This is what it says in Genesis 6:7. And the Lord said, I do bring a flood to destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man of the earth, beasts of the land, the fowls of the air, the great whales of the sea, and the fish of the water, and every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. I wonder if this means fish are corrupt and evil. Now I'm scared of the ocean again, dang it. And finally, from people. When Bill Clinton quoted the Beatitudes from the Bible, he combined a couple of them, because I guess he thought he could do that. He quoted it as, Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall inherit the earth. Well, the actual Beatitude verses are, Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God, and Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. They're not the same thing, guy. As he was listing his plans and proposals for the nation, he told of how the communities should be. What was written in the speech was, to make livable communities. But instead, he said, to make liberal communities. Interesting that this came from a liberal. And from his wife, Hillary, speaking at a Democratic fundraiser, give Bill a second term and Al Gore and I will be turned loose to do what we really want to do. I don't know, or want to know, I think, what that means. And another from Hillary. I'm not going to have some reporters pawing through our papers. We are the president. We. And just one more from a song that just about everyone recognizes and apparently no one listens to. In the first verse of Country Roads by John Denver, the lyrics are Almost Heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Well, the boofa here is that the Blue Ridge Mountains and Shenandoah River are both in Virginia, not West Virginia. If he hadn't already flown away to heaven, hopefully in a better plane than his last one, I would have to smack him on the nose. You could at least know the geography of your own country, man. Man. Now then, wasn't that a bit fun? I thought it was. If you agree or have some more fun funds to feed my meanie, you can leave me a little note on the homepage of the show. That's threethings.podomatic.com. And that's thing number two, finished.
Sing that silly song.
thing number three today, being positive can improve your luck. It appears that people who tell you to look on the bright side are right, according to a psychologist who says it makes you luckier in life. Richard Weissman has spent 8 years investigating why some people appear to be consistently lucky or unlucky. He said it is not intelligence or psychic ability, but a person's approach to life that matters, and he has devised four principles of luck. One is to expect good fortune, which he says is often a self-fulfilling prophecy. The others are maximize your chances of something good happening by creating, noticing, and acting on opportunities. Listen to gut feelings and act on hunches about people or situations. And cope with bad luck and turn it around by imaging how things could have been worse or looking at what could be done about the problem instead of just moping about it. Dr. Weissman actually ran a luck school to see if he could teach unlucky people how to be lucky by using those four principles. It's being positive about everything you do rather than looking for bad luck to come your way. He estimates he has been successful in about 80% of his cases, and around 70 people have been through the school so far. The change in luck has continued after people finished the month-long course. That's a good thing. Said Dr. Weissman, who has written a book outlining his principles, not everything is under control, but a lot more is about your way of thinking and behaving. He added, I don't think there are any quick fixes. You can't just say cheer up. The whole thing is about looking at living different ways. And he said, if people do want to change their luck, now's a good time to do it. One lady says she has had her luck changed by the luck school. Before she took part, she had had to cope with the deaths of friends, relatives, and pets in close succession. She was prone to accidents and very unhappy in her personal life. But since the luck school, she says she has started winning regularly at bingo and on the national lottery and has been able to have a more positive outlook in life. She says, before, bad luck never came in threes, it came in nines, twelves, or fifteens. Now, if something bad happens, I think of it as good luck, as it could have been worse. It's being positive, again, about everything you do, rather than looking for bad luck to come your way. Professor Weissman once gave both lucky and unlucky people a newspaper and asked them to look through it and tell him how many photographs were inside. On average, the unlucky people took about 2 minutes to count the photographs, whereas the lucky people took just seconds. Why? Because the second page of the newspaper contained the message, stop counting, there are 43 photographs in this newspaper. The message took up half of the page and was written in type that was more than 2 inches high. It was staring everyone straight in the face, but the unlucky people tended to miss it, and the lucky people tended to spot it. For added fun, he placed a second large message halfway through the newspaper, stop counting, tell the experimenter you have seen this, and win 250 pounds. Again, the unlucky people missed the opportunity because they were still too busy looking for photographs. Isn't that something? Personality tests revealed that unlucky people are generally much more tense than lucky people, and research has shown that anxiety disrupts people's ability to notice the unexpected. In one experiment, people were asked to watch a moving dot in the center of a computer screen. Without warning, large dots would occasionally be flashed at the edges of the screen. Nearly all participants noticed these large dots. The experiment was then repeated with a second group of people who were offered a large financial reward for accurately watching the center dot, creating more anxiety. They became focused on the center dot, and more than a third of them missed the large dots when they appeared on the screen. The harder they looked, the less they saw. So that's how it seems to go, lucky-wise speaking. Unlucky people miss chance opportunities because they are looking so hard for something else. They go to parties intent on finding their perfect partner, and so miss opportunities to make good friends. They look through newspapers determined to find certain types of job advertisements, and as a result, miss other types of jobs. Lucky people are more relaxed and open, and therefore see what is there rather than just what they are looking for. So it would appear that what I have always said is the truth and the way. Smile. You still breathe. It could be worse. Seems as if you look at life that way, luck will find you. That's a good thing to know, methinks. So now you know it. Smile, you still breathe. And I hope you continue to do so for a really long time. And with that, I will end this thing, that is thing number 3, for today, by wishing you good luck. And now, my favorite new segment, This Day in History. On this day in history, in case you are like me and often don't know the date, that's September 22nd, in the year 131 AD, or CE, whichever you prefer, Claudius Galen, Italian physician and scholar, was born. And in 1408, Johann VII, Palaeologus, Byzantine emperor, died. In 1529, Cardinal Thomas Wolsey laid off the English Lord Chancellor. In 1692, the last person was hanged for witchcraft in Salem, Massachusetts. In 1694, Philip Dormer Stanhope, Lord Chesterfield, statesman of letters whose writings provide a classic portrayal of an ideal 18th century gentleman, was born. He introduced the Gregorian calendar in 1752. In 1745, Bonnie Prince Charlie's army returned to Edinburgh. In 1791, Michael Faraday, English physicist, was born in London. He demonstrated that a magnetic field induces a current in a moving conductor. He invented the dynamo, the transformer, and the electric motor. Thank you. In 1850, an earthquake in Sichuan, China, killed some 300,000 people. In 1903, Italo Marchionne applied for a patent for pastry cornets to hold ice cream and was granted the patent on December 3, 1903. Ice cream cones were popularized in the 1904 St. Louis World's Fair. I love ice cream cones. Thanks, Italo. In 1939, Junko Tabe, Japan, the first woman to climb Mount Everest, was born. Way to go, girl. In 1959, the first telephone cable linking Europe and the United States was inaugurated. And I think Lucy called home using that on the show. I love Lucy. Anyway. In 1989, Irving Berlin, one of America's most prolific songwriters, died in New York City at the age of 101. In 1991, University of California made the Dead Sea Scrolls public. In 1996, in Australia, Bob Dent became the first person to kill himself legally under the world's only voluntary euthanasia law. In 1997, Shoichi Yokoi, 82, Japanese World War II fighter who only surrendered in 1972, died. Way to go, guy. That's the way to keep the fight going. Keep your eye on the prize. And last but not least, and just for kicks, and because I like mice, the 5 millionth Mickey Mouse watch was sold on September 22nd in 1949. So gosh, today, September 22nd, was a pretty interesting day in history. I look forward to finding out what happened on September 29th, next week, on episode 35 of Three Things.
If you love to smoke, then you know there's no place left in America where you can light up a butt these days. That's why Carnival is proud to offer our new Smoker's Cruise. You'll board our luxury liner and be off to, who cares where you go? The point is, you'll be in international waters where you can smoke 24 hours a day for a full 2 weeks.
They let us smoke on the dance floor, at all our meals, even in the pool.
I like all the activities. Smoke-alongs, cigar races. Hey, I met a babe who smokes unfiltered Luckies. What?
The Smoker's Crew. Sign up now for regular or menthol. Hey, it's not just a vacation. It's the lung boat.
It's my friend. Could be. Now.
here we are, together at the end. How romantic. I hope you are all feeling as mushy and lovey as I am at this moment in time. Our being together does that for me, and I cannot wait until it happens again next week. Until such a time as that occurs, remember that whole thing about luck and how you make it. Keep your eyes wide open and your heart wider still. Call an old friend. Send a card to a lonely old auntie. Feed your pets. And remember, always please remember, to forgive yourself and be happy. Good day.
Mission have been completed.
He's bugging out and going home.
No point in hanging around this dump any longer.
I'm going to miss you. You had such potential. But then again, all good things must come to an end.
Well, I guess it's time for your old birdie buddy, Big Bird, to say hasta la vista.
Goodbye, good luck, and good riddance.
You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Gentlemen, it's been a privilege flying with you.
And like that, he's gone.
Now give me a kiss and say goodnight.
Scat, skedaddle,
adios, arrivederci, ciao, aloha, bug off.
If you'll not be needing me, I'll close down for a while.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Ooh, yes.
TTFN, ta-ta for now.